Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. As always at this time, delighted to be joined in studio by John Giles. How are you?
Good, Nathan.
So a new era for Irish football starts tomorrow. Unfortunately, we're not looking forward to a World Cup. We're already thinking about 2020 European Championship. Yeah. It's a long way away, but do games like this ultimately matter?
Oh yeah, very, very much so. I think it's not what we wanted to have these friendly matches before the next competitive match. But from a manager's point of view, it's ideal preparation. A lot of new lads coming into the team. And I think the more matches you can get, obviously, the more you're going to learn. So by the time we come to our next competitive match, we should be in as good a shape as we possibly can be.
We talk about new lads. They're not necessarily young lads. Declan Rice is 19, but the vast majority of the other players who are going to play tomorrow are mid to early 20s. So they played a lot of club football at this stage. When players are coming in to camp for first time for internationals, what are you looking for? Are you looking for them to be a personality in the squad? Are you looking for what they can do technically, ability to follow orders?
Well, hopefully you will have seen them, Nathan. I'm sure Martin and Roy Keane would have seen these players play for the clubs. Mm. I'd be amazed if they didn't. So they'd have a good idea of what they're like. Obviously, when you get them together, then it's more intimate. You find out what their personality is like, what they're good at. Are they cheeky? Are they confident? Are they not so confident? And there's a way to treat them after that. And that all takes time. But this week is very important to me, because I think they're away for nearly a week. So you get to know players pretty quickly. You see them on the pitch. You think you know them until you meet them personally. And players can be totally different. I've met lads, played with players, against players, who would be very, very shy off the pitch. But once they get on the pitch, they're different altogether. That's where you want them. Mm. To be not cheeky, but confident. And I've seen plenty of players like, I played a lot at Leeds, for example, Paul Madeley, who was a great player, terrific player. He wouldn't say a word off the pitch. You know, we used to call him Mr. Spock. You remember Mr. Spock? Because he never showed any emotion, but he was a terrific lad. But on the pitch, he did his stuff. And that's where you want him. There's no good having a loudmouth on the pitch, off the pitch, and then getting on the pitch and not doing it. So I think all those things you learn when you're with those lads now for nearly a week.
Yeah, that's something that's more difficult to judge, is it, actually, at international level. At club level, you have a player around you day in, day out. You get to know that, all right, he's a bit quieter, but I know I can trust him. Whereas when you go away for a week like this, if someone sort of backs away, you can wonder whether it's a lack of confidence.
You get to know them pretty quickly, Nathan.
Yeah.
You get to know them pretty quickly, and the pals around them and how they behave and all that. Now, you know a good bit about them after a week, and certainly you know a lot more about them on the pitch when you're speaking one-on-one with the particular player. So it's a new time. It's a new beginning for Martin. It's a new beginning for the team. It's a new beginning for Martin. I'm sure Martin has learned a lot in the previous qualifier. You know, he made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes at the time, and realising what mistakes did I make, and put them right for the next get together.
Yeah, is that the real key here, that when we head to these Nations Cup fixtures, which I think Ireland are going to take as competitive games in the autumn, that we see signs that O'Neill has learned the lessons of the defeat to Denmark, that there are improvements in the structure, that there are improvements in the style? Or with Martin O'Neill, all his experience, everything he's done throughout his career, do you sense maybe it'll be the same old, we'll have the same question marks in 6 months' time?
I'm surprised if it is, because he's a very intelligent individual, Martin. I don't know Martin very well, I've only met him a few occasions, but he's a very intelligent guy. And like, when you're managing a football team, obviously you've got to look back. What did I do? Did I do everything? Nobody does everything right. And go on to things you did wrong. I mean, I think Martin's attitude after the Denmark match was, well, that's what I did. But he did make mistakes in the Denmark match, you know, changing the team at halftime and whatever. That happens. That happens to every manager. But you have to recognise that to put it right for the next time. And I'd be amazed, having gone over it, I'm sure he has, like all managers do, say, well, I mightn't have been quite right on that one. Because you don't do it. Nobody does everything right. Mm. And it's learning from your mistakes and admitting your mistakes to go next time. And it's new, because a lot of new lads coming into the team now. But you live and learn all the time, Nathan.
We've spoken previously on several occasions about the mistakes of the first leg against Denmark as well, and the attitude going over there where we basically didn't try and play any football and seemed happy enough, delighted to get away from Copenhagen with a scoreless draw. Would you like to see O'Neill develop this squad over the next 18 months to a position where, if we're in a playoff for 2020, if for these crucial games, that there's more confidence within the group to get the ball down, to do the right things away from home?
I would think so. I think the away from home is a myth. I've said that quite a few times. When you play any football match, you take it on its merits, right? In other words, you go to, say the first match we played, we were having a bad time. We went in front after 2 minutes. The goalkeeper was the worst goalkeeper in the world. And we got a 2-2 draw in the end. But we had to come back from there. I think with a more positive approach to that, on the day on its merits, if it's there for the taking, we take it. If we have to defend for 90 minutes, we defend for 90 minutes, Nathan. But when we have an opportunity to attack, we're going to attack. Now, you say the Denmark match. I think going into the Denmark match, we had no intentions of attacking at all. So we lost an opportunity. I'm not saying they'll take risks and do all sorts of tricky stuff. Just be positive when you have the ball, as well as you possibly can be, to go and score a goal. We didn't have that. I don't think we lost an opportunity there because we didn't have the away goal. And I think if we go into these next matches, qualifiers, if you take, say, even Northern Ireland, Iceland, for example, you know, they've no better players than us. And this idea that we are way behind in many people's eyes is we don't have great players, but neither do the others. And I think if we go with a more positive attitude into it, if it's there for the taking, let's take it. Because if you look at the matches, we won in Austria, we won in Wales. You know, we won in Wales because we had to win in Wales. So it's an attitude of mind. And of course, the players have to come up to scratch. These are new players now.
And does that come from weeks like this, getting that message across to
definitely.
Players? Because you often mention that O'Neill and Keane aren't telling them not to do something, but they're not telling them to do something. That this is actually the time when you're 4 or 5 days together, which you rarely get now in international football, to hammer home that sort of message.
From day one. Say, this is what we're going, this is the attitude that we're going to bring into the game. And I think what a lot of the managers do is take the pressure off the players as much as you possibly can. In other words, this is what I want you to do, right? If we lose doing that, it's my fault, right? And that's the big thing. I mean, if you look at Manchester City, now they're exceptional because he's got great players, but he shows terrific moral courage at Guardiola. He's encouraging, get on the ball. If you lose it, and they have lost the time, no, I want you to continue. So you take the pressure off the players. That was being my experience as a manager. You know, like I had an experience at West Brom when I first went to West Brom, the two centre-halves were not used to coming out. And I was saying, come out, when I'm on the ball or somebody come out, and took them ages to do it. And what I said was, look, if you come out and you lose the ball and they score, it's my fault. So you're releasing the pressure on the players or the responsibility on the players.
Are you making that public? Are you letting the fans know that this is what you're trying to do?
No.
Because that maybe is possibly one of the issues that Martin O'Neill faces, that we read so much into every result that if there are, and maybe again with everything that happened with Stoke, that he doesn't have a lot of leeway with supporters, that if you try something new against Turkey and it doesn't work, that suddenly there's a pressure there.
Yeah, it's not new though, Nathan, to be honest. I mean, that's football. And I'm only giving you my opinion of what a manager should do to release the pressure. Because when you go, you see, players are very, very... cautious if the manager doesn't encourage him to do it. Like, I'm only saying how that was the way to do it, to say to the central defenders, look, come out, right, just come out, get on the ball, then release it simply, and if you lose it and they score, that's my fault. So the player now is thinking, oh, I've no problem, I'll get on that. And that's the way it works. So the manager's taking the responsibility, not in stupid things, but if you want the players to play in a certain way. You know what I mean? If we had Georgia to play all over again, right, and we scored after 2 minutes, and you would say to the players, look, if we score after 2 minutes, keep going, go for the next one. Don't mean stupid. You don't have to be stupid doing it. Just go for the next one. Be positive. Because the best way of defending is to have the ball. And there's nothing better than scoring a goal. If it's there for the taking, Nathan, if you have to defend for 90 minutes, then you defend for 90 minutes. But if you have a chance to do it, do it. You have my blessing to do it. Go on and do it.
One of the players I think people are really looking forward to seeing is Shawny Maguire from Preston, who has had a few minutes already in one of the qualifiers against Moldova. Interesting comments, and you mentioned trying to take pressure off players at times. Almost seen the other way with O'Neill, where he was saying he'd gone to see Shawny Maguire with Cork several occasions, hadn't really been impressed with him. Maybe he's trying to do that because all the talk around Shawny Maguire is he needs to be the new Robbie Keane.
Yeah.
Trying to get that balance right.
Yeah, well, that can be difficult, you know, because ultimately it comes down to the player.
Mm.
You know, if the player hasn't got it in him, no matter what you do, he's not going to be able to do it.
Well, I just wonder with a striker like Shawny Maguire, who's come back from injury, who's flying with Preston, I think he's 5 goals in 4 games, to get that balance between keeping, not wanting to heap pressure on him, but also wanting to keep his confidence up.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the manager's job. You see, managers are psychologists in many ways. Some of them not so good. Like Mourinho hasn't been very good in the last couple of weeks, for example. But anyway, that's another day's work. But a manager has to be, so he has to judge the player. Can I give him a kick up the backside?
Yeah.
Does he need a bit? You know, if he's not playing well, he's not scoring goals, but you know he can score goals. You know, to say, come on, keep your, you're a terrific player. Or you're well able to score goals. I've got faith in you. I'm picking you. That helps. But the player ultimately has to go out and do it.
There's going to be a big crowd there tomorrow, which probably helps matters even for Martin O'Neill, that there will be a bit of intensity around it. They're expecting 35,000.
Yeah.
We've quite a history with Turkey down through the years, from the playoff for Euro 2000 and Tony Cascarino, which we heard on the show last night. You were player manager in 75 when Don Givens scored the 4 goals against Turkey.
Yeah, that was our second competitive match when I was manager.
Mm.
But I'd played in Turkey before that, in the bad old days when we had a selection committee.
Night. Right.
A total joke. We played in Ankara.
How was that?
Ankara wasn't the nicest of places. The pitch was a quagmire. We got beaten on the day. And it was funny in Ankara. I don't know what has changed now, but even during the day, we were in, like, there was like thousands of people wandering around. Like about 15,000, 20 came to see us training. That's how bad it was. And
was that a hostile atmosphere, or just happy to see you?
Hostile. Totally hostile. In fact, I think Eamon Dunphy played in the match. I think somebody gave him a kick or something coming off. We were beaten as well. And it was the bad old days when the selectors picked the team. Because I remember, it was around February time. And in those days, you didn't have to be automatically released.
Mm.
And it was February. And because Don Revy would obviously, like, I don't want you going there. I said, no, I'd like to go to Turkey, you know. Actually, I thought, nice and sunny, we get a bit of a break from the winter in England. And went over, nightmare. Snow, freezing, freezing cold. The pitch was a quagmire. We got beat, you know, and they were totally hostile. That was my first experience.
Wow.
My second experience, I think, was in Izmir. This was when I was manager of the team. We'd beaten them 4-0 here.
74.
It was a return match in 74. And Izmir was a beautiful place. Holiday. And I was dreading going to Izmir.
It'll be the same old story.
Yeah, and then we played in the capital in Turkey, in a friendly match. And I don't know whether they've changed over the years or not, Nathan. But when we played them in a friendly match here as well, Lansdowne Road. Now we beat them, we had beaten them 4 in the competitive match, but a year or two later we played them. And we were 4-0 up at half time. I always felt with the Turks, they saw the names of our players playing for big teams in England, and they were totally scared. Right, and a match in Dublin, I remember, forget, we were 4-0 up half time. We got a penalty just after half time, and Ray Chase was on a hat trick, which I shouldn't have let him take. He missed it. They got 2 goals back on us, Nathan, and we hung on at the end. In other words, what they did, these guys are not that good. Now it was a bit late for them,
so they started the game in awe of you, delighted to be sharing the same pitch.
Exactly. And then we did the same, and we went to what's the capital of
Istanbul.
We played in Istanbul another time, a year or two later. I think it might be Frank Stapleton's first goal. And we were 2-0 up there. And it was the same thing. They were hopeless. Second half, they started really playing.
Yeah.
Went 3-2 in front. And we got a 3-3 draw. That's how I found the Turks, generally. A lot of good players, but didn't have a belief. Now, whether they've changed, that's a long time ago. But that's the way they were. Two or three examples of that. That these guys started to play. You know, they must have said at halftime, as I did, I know the feeling, because we used to be like that in the old days with the Irish team. We had loads of moral victories coming in after the match with the selection committee. We never looked like they were going, and come in and say, they weren't that good, you know, I think we could have done a bit, but it was too late.
Yeah.
And I think the Turks were like that with us. Now, they probably have changed since then.
JP tells me Ankara is in fact the capital of Turkey rather
than
Istanbul.
Thank you, JP. Yeah, and I couldn't believe it when we went to Ankara, to be quite honest.
That this is you thought you were going to Istanbul.
It certainly wasn't Istanbul anyway. But
We might take a very quick break. There's a couple of things I want to touch on, but we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with more with John.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
You're welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. John Giles is still alongside me in studio. Istanbul is comfortably the biggest city in Turkey, we should point out. It was an easy mistake to make that it's not the capital.
I should have known because I was in Ankara at the time and I thought, God, how could this be the capital of Turkey?
You would prefer to be in Istanbul.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Just a couple of things and all that. The selection committee, which I know you've spoken about before, who gave the team talks when the selection committee was picking the team?
Well, the manager, you see, they had a manager in name, like Jackie Carty, who was a great Irish player in my time when I was a kid, one of my idols. He was the manager when I first got into the team.
So was he just one voice on that selection committee?
I don't think he had any voice on it.
Right.
They used to call it the Big Five.
So he was essentially just a coach?
Yeah. He I don't think they would have even... The five, you see, for example, in those days, say you put a few bob into Limerick, you could become... president of Limerick. You could be on the selection committee next year.
And how long did the selection committee remain in place? Was it the same five for a full season or would it change every game?
At least for a year.
Okay.
At least you'd then be a vote for the selection committee.
And would they travel over to England and scout players?
Well, they did sometimes. So they wouldn't know a player if he kicked them. That's what that means. But that was the way it was. And it would go on. They didn't know anything about football. I mean, they weren't football people.
Yeah.
You know, they could be businessmen there and they'd be in the game for 2 minutes and next thing you're on the selection committee.
So did that mean you'd be turning up for internationals and you'd have been playing against players in the English league and they wouldn't be in the squad and you'd be wondering where they are and
they
wouldn't have even heard of them,
What they did a lot was, a team like Everton had a few Irish players playing for them in over the years. If they were going well, they're more likely to be picked. You know?
Yeah.
Like they'd go on where they were in the league and they'd no idea about it.
So it wasn't on personal performance, it was how your team was doing and what the name was.
Yeah.
And when you were in probably?
Yeah. No, the next match you could change totally.
Right.
Oh, there was no continuity in it. You know, you could play 11 this and the next match, there could be six changes depending, because there weren't that many matches together at that time. There'd be a gap in me. Oh, there was total inconsistency.
And did our results suffer massively because of that?
Oh, yeah. So you couldn't do anything. We had occasional wins.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You'd win occasionally in Dalymount, whether it be Dalymount playing on a Sunday and that. But generally speaking, away from home, it was awful. It was awful.
You obviously came into that system as a player, so it's all you ever knew. But would the players be talking amongst themselves that this isn't right?
We need to. Yeah, but you see, you wouldn't be together that often.
You're looking at England and Alf Ramsey and what they're doing.
Well, that's what we did. We got together in the main part of that was in 1969. I was playing for Leeds at the time. We just won the league. And they picked a squad of 16 to go to, I think it was Denmark. And I wasn't in it. I wasn't in the 16. This was with the selection committee. And the what came back to me was, he doesn't play as well for Ireland as he does for Leeds. Now, that was my fault, not their fault, where the team changed all the time.
Yeah.
We'd no continuity, we'd no practising, we'd no nothing. It was my fault. Because I wasn't putting it in, it was an easy way of doing it, and then he picked it. Then there was a squad picked then for the last. I think it was Denmark. They lost in that match. There was another match coming up, and I said, "No, I was picked for the second match," and I said, "No, I'm not fit. I haven't been training. If I wasn't in the 16 to play in Denmark, I didn't think I'd going to be in the 16 to play in the next match." It was a bit of an excuse, but after that, we got together as a group. Eamon O'Dunphy was involved in it, a few was involved, Alan Kelly, senior players, Tony Dunn. And we actually went to the selection committee and got rid of them.
And it worked?
Yeah, of course. Mick Meegan took over as the first manager, Liam Toohey took over. So they were able to pick the... Now, what happened was that they weren't taking it lightly. They didn't want it. So what we said was, look, you can keep the selection committee and you can go on the trips. It was all about trips, going on the trips, the free trips and that. You keep your selection committee, you can go on your free trips, but you're not picking the team. And they agreed to that.
So what, they picked the squad?
No, they picked nothing.
Okay. So there were a selection committee in name
that
got to go on a junket.
Yeah.
And got to go and enjoy the
But the manager picked foreign cities, manager and picked that was the it. Team, picked the squad and team after that, and then we picked up. Obviously, well, there was more continuity. It was run in a professional way after that.
When you would link up, would that be for 3-4 days at a time? Would it be McMeegan and a team of coaches? What sort of backroom staff had you?
Well, if you were playing friendly matches would be on a Sunday. So you'd play on a Saturday, you play on a Sunday.
So you play for your club on the Saturday and then over and play international on Sunday?
Wherever you were, you made your way over. And then it got a bit better for the competitive matches because we started having the competitive matches on the Wednesday. So there weren't as many competitive. See, when I was playing in the team and I actually took over as a team, there was only a group of four. But you had to win the group. Mm. You know, people say to me, could criticise me, well, you never qualified for the Champions or the World Cup, which I didn't. But we finished in third, second and third in something. You had to win it.
That group in 76 where you had Turkey and the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
You beat the Soviet Union, but they won the group.
We lost it, yeah. But we had to win that group. There was no playoffs in third place, or even in second place. You had to win it, because there was less teams. There was only about, if you go back on, there was only about 8 to 10 teams qualified for the Euros.
Eight
teams. So you had little or no chance of qualifying. But at least we were making a stab at it. You know, we were actually beating teams. I think before I took over the team, I'm not patting myself on the back, I think we'd won 3 matches in 5 years. We were a joke, you know, like we had a selection. England had Ramsey in 1963, I think, as their manager, and a lot of other teams. We were 1970 by the time we got a manager.
And did you enjoy it? Did you still, when you're going through such a horrible spell, and clearly you're playing brilliantly with your club and you're winning league titles and you're at the top of the game in England, and you're coming back here to what it sounds like is essentially amateur football.
It was awful. And I say I was left out of the squad of 16, having just won the league at Leeds, because I was getting the blame. He's not playing as well for Ireland as he is for nothing about them making a mess of it and picking off and the conditions and the hotel bookings and all the various things was a mess. So in other words, nothing was their fault. If I wasn't playing well for Ireland as I was for Leeds, it was my fault. So I'm leaving them out.
Yeah, it wasn't that things were done right in Leeds so you could perform to
exactly,
your best.
Exactly. Very, very professional team, as you can imagine. And I'm coming back to this shambles of it. We used to have to bring our own gear for training and that.
So you had no training kit?
No.
And when you're going back to Leeds and you're telling players who've just won a World Cup what you're having to put up with, are you laughing stock?
They wouldn't, but of course. It was always a laughing stock. They wouldn't believe you, you know, because they got it. Now, to be fair, England had similar situation before Ramsey took over. Like, they had Winterbottom, who was the coach for England for years. But they could pick the team. They had no continuity in the team, because they had the selection committee the same as we did. And then they got a grip of themselves. Ramsey was appointed in 63, I think. It took 3 years before they winning the World Cup. So it was professionally run. Ramsey was brilliant at what he did. No, they wouldn't take any nonsense from the selection, or it was the old selection committee, and got on with the job. Like we did eventually, you know, we were in 1969-70 by the time we did that.
So you didn't go to Denmark and then you didn't come in for the second game of that. Was that the only time where you didn't fancy coming in with Ireland, or were there other
I always played after that. I missed a few matches because Don Revie didn't want any of the lads gone. No manager ever wants to play.
Well, especially if you're playing on a Saturday and you're due to play again for the international side.
He never wanted any of the players to go with the international team, even the English players, right? And in my situation, I missed quite a few matches because of all this nonsense. Mm. So we did make the final protest to get rid of them. And then we were okay. I mean, McMeegan took over, Liam Toohey took over. At least they were in charge of it was being professionally run.
Yeah. I mean, did you still feel you were playing catch-up when you took over?
There was a couple of things happened. Liam Toohey, I got on well with Leanne McMeegan. Liam was good. And Liam resigned. I thought he'd go on. So we had nobody. I didn't look for the job. I was playing for Leeds at the time, a top team. And Des Casey and Fran Fields came to see me and said, would I take over as player manager? And I thought, well, I don't know anything about that. I mean, I'd have to ask Don Revie. And he said, yeah, but Leeds would have to take preference. Now, this is a time when the FAI was skint. They hadn't got two bob to rub together, and it was, I took it, I was 33 at the time, and the reason I took it, because, well, I didn't want anybody, I was a senior professional at that time, I didn't want anybody taking over, the Irish team that I didn't get on with. Mm. So I said, I can do it, but it'll be under certain conditions. Leeds will have priority in what I was doing. But at least we got it going from that.
How did that conversation go with Don Revie when you tell him he doesn't even want you going friendlies and suddenly you're going to manage the team?
Yeah, I wouldn't have been doing any more, really. Okay. You know, I would have been gone with the Irish team anyway. And no, he was quite good. He was quite good about it. He said, as long as it doesn't interfere with, like, Leeds obviously had priority on it. Yeah. You know, like, I was criticised after a few years when I was doing that for not going looking at players. But that was the criticism I took the job under, you know.
The 4-0 win against Turkey then, just to wrap up, Don Given, certainly when I was a kid and growing up, was very much a legendary figure in Irish football, because for so long he was the leading scorer. So many of the good days were his four goals against Turkey or his hat-trick against Russia were the moments that stood out. Just how good a player was he?
Don was good. He was a great finisher. Don was he's a great finisher. He wouldn't have scored the goals he did, but he was sort of streaky, Don.
Right.
You know,
I guess his record shows. Like
those two matches, he scored 7 goals.
Yeah,
right. And at club level, he could go. Now, he's a very, very good goal scorer. I Don was terrific. I love Don, but I don't think he was the most confident lad.
Okay.
In the world.
So he'd have his moments where everything would click
against the USSR. This wasn't Russia. This was the USSR when we played them, and he's scored a great hat trick. All good goals. It's Turkey 4 goals, 7 goals in 2 matches. Right, and he played for Luton for a while. He played for Birmingham as well. And I think he always scored a fair amount of goals, but it could be streaky. But he was a really good lad. Don was a great lad.
Was he a out and out poacher, or was there more to his game than that?
You could link it up. He could link it up all right, Don. But I'd put him more in the poaching.
Right.
In the poaching game, you know, he was a good header of the ball. He was deceptively quick. He was a good finish. Don had a lot going. He had a good big career. And he started off at Manchester United. Didn't make it at Manchester United, and then he went to Luton. He had a very good lot. Queen's Park Rangers had a good run. He mightn't have gone to, I'm not so sure. Anyway, he didn't make it at Manchester. He wasn't kept at Manchester United. But Don went on to have a first class. And Don was a very intelligent footballer. You know what I mean? You can tell, when you're dealing with players.
He understood the game.
You could tell him once, I'd got that.
Yeah.
You know, I played with lads, you could tell him 10 times, Nathan. And I used to tell them 3 times and that was it. If they didn't get it after 3 times,
they were gone.
You could forget about it.
The 76 Euros then, that the Soviet Union won that group, and where you had beaten Turkey, and that wasn't one of these great travesties against Irish football, was it?
No.
There was no great controversy. Soviet Union was the better team.
We had a few, not in those particular matches, not in that series, but we had a few. Yeah. We were robbed in Bulgaria. We were robbed in Paris. My time, Liam Brady, if you've ever seen, goes to the end line, pulls it back. Frank Stoutman scored and it was disallowed. Bulgaria, I think everybody was robbed in Bulgaria. When I was manager, I went to see France play in Bulgaria. And France were robbed. Robbed.
So you knew it was coming.
Bulgaria never lost a game. It was one of the miracles in football that we qualified for the first major competition, you know, under Jack.
Because we were in their group.
No, the Scotland went to Bulgaria for the last match and they had to win in Bulgaria for us to qualify.
Gary Mackay.
Nobody had ever won in Bulgaria before. Ever. Used to be robbed in Bulgaria. Everybody. They qualified. Bulgaria used to qualify year after year after year for the major competitions and did nothing in the competitions when they got there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They made the most of their home advantage.
Oh, definitely. Well, I was at the French match, for example, and Platini and these guys, really top class French team. And I think it was Platini got through the goalkeeper. Took him down, cleaned him out.
Play on.
There was nobody, but that's the way.
Pretty dispiriting, all right, I would imagine.
Yeah.
John, great stuff. Thanks a lot, as always, for coming.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again next Thursday. Up next, we are going to be talking to Tony O'Reilly and Declan Lynch about their new book, Tony 10.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.